Episode 102 of the TV Dudes, recorded October 6, 2016. From Harlem to Westworld. So let's kick this off with a little intro that, first of all, this is the dulcet tones of Randy coming through. Grant is not with us today.
No, Grant.
We have two of our rotating guest hosts with us. And guys, welcome aboard.
Why, thank you for having us aboard.
Yeah. I mean, finally, Grant free at last.
Yeah.
No more Grant. Uh-huh. Yeah,
okay. The truth is, he's buried in my backyard. I've taken over. It was a coup. And it was not a bloodless
game. I was going to watch your whole season, Randy, but spoilers. Now I don't care.
Sorry. Yeah,
I just really wanted to feel what this chair feels like. Oh, it's comfy.
We are the TV Dudes. I'm Randy.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Les.
And we're going to be talking this episode about Westworld and Luke Cage.
All right.
And before we get to that, I just want to throw out a quick shout out to our buddies over at Ion Marvel TV. It was Ion TV. They are now refocusing a little bit. They are part of the Hit Record Network, just like we are. And cool. They just put up their first episode about Luke Cage, episode one. They're going to go episode by episode on that thing. Kind of like the Beach Cop Detectives that I myself do.
Ooh.
And the first episode that they've done is Nate Bliss and Mike Mooney with their guest Martin Thomas. You can find it over at www.permanentrcrd.com.
You said Hit Record earlier.
Did I say hit record?
You said hit record.
I am constantly doing that.
Which is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's amazing thing.
Different
than Permanent Record.
Permanent Record is our network. Hit Record is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's network. One of these days, I'll stop saying that.
He's going to be like, where did I get this bump in traffic from? All these people are coming my way.
Something's finally going to happen for that kid now.
You're welcome, JGL. You're welcome. All right. So before we get started, a little housekeeping. If you like us and you want a free way to support us, you can go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write us a review. We'll read it on the air. If you listen to us before, you know we will read literally everything, anything you say. Anything.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Literally everything.
If you talk about how much Grant secretly hates Lost and he's reading the review, he's going to have to go along with it.
Those are wonderful moments.
Yes.
Really are.
if you put in something about the review about how I'm living a lie and that Terriers is not my favorite show, but Real Rob is,
Grant will read that too.
And then if you want to support us and spend a little money, you can go over to tvdudes.com or patreon.com/tvdudes.
Ooh, where the real fun stuff is.
You can throw us a little cash. We suggest maybe $1 an episode. Which won't cost you too much. We only do a few episodes a month. And for every episode, not only are you helping us make our content by giving us some money to get better sound equipment, giving us some money so that we can maybe go to the TV Fest, do better coverage for you. You will also get bonus every week, bonus content, where we will talk about things other than TV, like politics, movies, variety of other things. So
Seinfeld.
Seinfeld. Occasionally, we might read a Seinfeld script about 9/11.
If you're lucky.
All right, so let's go over to listener questions. What this is if you go like us on Facebook, you follow us on Twitter. We put up question posts every week, sometimes hours before the show, sometimes days before. And you can throw us questions, and we will happily answer them. So I'm going to jump right in here. Question from Zach McLernan. He says, with Rick and Morty maybe returning soon, what are your hopes and dreams for this new season? Now, guys, are you Rick and Morty fans?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
All right. So hopes and dreams?
I honestly, I don't feel like I have any suggestions I could make to Rick and Morty. That show's operating past me and is one of the few things that I am continually surprised at. It would be like asking me for a Venture Brothers plot. You guys got it. Just do your thing. I would hope to see more of Rick being obviously aware that they're in a scripted cartoon show.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're going with that. I don't know if he knows that he's one alternate universe or what, but he clearly knows, like, all right, that's a season wrap.
Yeah.
And I think it's wonderful that most of his decisions about his family, I think, are coming from a place where he knows they're not real.
Yeah, and he's already lost the one family he cared about.
Yeah. there's a whole really bitter fan theory, or really kind of depressing fan theory of, like, no, Rick is fully aware of this.
Yeah.
It would be funny if they did an episode where they just went through and like addressed all fan theories, where like alternate realities, this fan theory is actually true, and they just like went down the list.
I feel like there's a good chance Harmon might.
Yeah, that, I was going to say, that sounds like Dan Harmon. I could totally see that.
You know,
that.
A friend of mine was telling me a story the other day. They're like, oh, yeah, this Dan Harmon story. I remember being so enthralled in this story, and I'm like, what's that from? And he goes, oh, that was just him on his podcast, just like shooting the shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, God, he just, you know, he spits that fire.
He spits that fire. He'll rap for you. He'll insult your mama.
He's got some of that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Now, and I haven't watched his Sword and Sorcery animated.
Harmon Quest.
Yes.
On CISO, which... I don't have time for another network. I've got Netflix, I've got Hulu, I've got Amazon Prime, and yet...
I know some people that are helping out with stuff on CISO, and I feel obligated like I ought to be watching this channel.
Well, and the stuff they've got is so good. You can watch the first episode of Harmon Quest free on YouTube.
Okay.
And it's delightful. It's hilarious. It's him playing D&D with Aaron McGathy and Paul F. Tompkins.
Cool.
And it's so much fun, and... Every time that CISO branded content shows up my Facebook feed, I'm like, it's only $3. And I have to keep stopping myself because I know I don't have time for another network. But one of these days, I'm going to pull that trigger because there's good stuff on that network. And Harmon Quest is high on that list. I'm kind of where Les is on this, by the way. I think Rick and Morty is on a level that I can't even fathom. So all I have to offer is I would like them to show me what they've got.
There you go.
Michael Gustini asks... Last week's PTSD-themed episode of You're the Worst was the best episode the show has ever done, and it was almost nothing like a traditional episode of the show. It felt more like a terrific short film than an episode of television. Can you dudes think of other standout TV episodes that diverge completely from its show's usual structure or tone?
The Fly episode in Breaking Bad springs to mind.
Oh, yeah, that's a Rian Johnson joint.
Yeah, and that's just like a... Oh, yeah, I guess bottle episodes always end up like this on shows. Kind of like a clip episode stands out.
Yeah.
That's the one of recent memory that really jumps out at me as being a standout episode in a standout series.
Yeah, and bottle episodes can be kind of rough sometimes. Bottle episodes can be boring, or you feel that this bottle, like, okay, you guys ran out of money, got it. Mm-hmm. The Fly is an hour of fantastic TV. Yep.
You know, I don't remember what season, it's recent, but Louis did a two-parter where he cast someone to play himself as a kid.
Yeah.
And had Jeremy Renner come in as a pretty cool pot dealer that befriends the kid.
Loved that episode.
Oh, my gosh. That's some of the best TV I've ever seen. And sure enough, like you said, a lot of times when people do that, it can be boring or it can fall on its face. But, yeah, I was really impressed with when he stepped behind the camera, like just what he was able to create.
You know, Louis breaks format a lot because Louis also did that two-parter. When you said two-parter, I didn't know where you were going because he also did that. Mm-hmm. Was it a two-parter? It was just one episode. Season finale, I went to China, which was sort of off his usual thing. The USO tour. Like, Louis definitely broke his format
a
lot.
That is another one, yeah.
Yeah. So those are a few. I do want to say I did watch that episode of You're the Worst, and it is a great episode of TV.
I have not seen that yet, even though I love You're the Worst. So now I'm extra looking forward to.
Yeah, they did PTSD the same way they really like nailed depression. They nailed PTSD in a way where I was like, oh, I get this.
Now, I'm assuming this is an Edgar centric.
It is
episode,
it is
which is wonderful because that character's so great.
Yeah, and you know Edgar's always they've sort of played his PTSD for laughs. I didn't know that was a school.
Yeah. But they've always, the same with all the other jokes on the show, they always stay a little too serious about it to fully laugh at it. There's always a moment in the joke where you go, oh, no, wait, y'all are serious about this and still laughing. Yeah. You're horrible people.
Yeah, they almost, and I love the cast of You're the Worst, but they almost went to, wow, they may be really too awful, because they showed the flip side of kind of how Jimmy and Gretchen were being toward him, because now we see it from Edgar's point of view, and we see him dealing with like serious PTSD and shit, and they're just treating him like a chauffeur. And I'm like, oh, they almost made them unlikable for me.
Wow.
It's really impressive and really just a great episode of TV. And it's still funny.
Did you think it was similar to the next door neighbor across the street cold open for one of the episodes?
Not quite that far, because we know Edgar, and so it didn't feel quite like, wait a minute, did they put the wrong show in this slot? But it was definitely like a different viewpoint on the show that we've seen before.
Cool.
Now I'm just waiting for the Killian episode where we see what this little kid does all day. I'd watch that. I think it'd be a fantastic episode. Benjamin Himmel asks, so right now we have a Terriers podcast. We do have a Terriers podcast. Thank you, Benjamin, for noticing. But what happens after that gets done? Are there any other short-lived TV shows that you guys think deserve a podcast? Cough, cough, Karen Sisko, cough, cough.
Well, does he not know the master plan for the Terriers podcast?
The master plan?
So step one, Terriers podcast.
Sure.
Step two is Terrier season two, of course, because what else is the podcast going to accomplish?
Right.
And then step three is the podcast about Terrier season two. That's the next podcast.
He's right. That is the secret master plan.
Yeah, eventually this thing just fuels itself.
Yeah. The podcast comes out, and it's sort of a Talking Dead, but for Terriers.
Yeah.
Walking Terriers.
Walking Terriers.
Hey, that works.
Tell me that's the first time you've made that joke.
That is the first. That just came to me.
Oh, that is... Somebody write that down.
I do want to address the Karen Sisko of it all, by the way, because I loved that show.
Yes.
It's not streaming anywhere. It's
really?
Not available on Blu-ray. I mean, Terriers, it's a travesty that Terriers did not get a Blu-ray release, but Terriers at least is on Netflix. Karen Sisko's nowhere, and I loved that show. So I would love to do a Karen Sisko podcast. I loved that show, and I'm a huge Elmore Leonard fan. I'm a huge Carl Gugino fan, but... Until it's streaming somewhere, I feel like probably there's not an audience for
it. That's kind of how I feel about wanting to do something about lost pilots or forgotten pilots,
yeah.
which Randy and I have discussed before. There are so many shows that get a one-off, and sometimes they get aired, like Mockingbird Lane.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're just in the wind on the internet, like Global Frequency. Sometimes you just can't find them, like Lock and Key.
Yeah.
But the problem is it would...
You're talking to a very small audience.
Yeah, they're talking to a very small audience who can actually go see them. While there may be a wide audience that wants that would want to see them or want to discuss them,
yeah.
I think it's just annoying to not be able to go then watch Global Frequency.
Yeah, we need to get Karen Sisko onto Netflix, and then I will happily do this podcast. I'm absolutely willing to make that deal. I will make that deal with Netflix or whoever else I have to make it with. But it can't get in the way of the Terrier Season 2 podcast. That is going to have to be a priority. Yeah,
we've got steps to go through.
Yeah, it's a good point. Justin Zarian says, there seem to be a lot of long-running shows plotting out their endgame lately, including Homeland, Adventure Time, Archer, and more. It's probably for the best to not let the shows get stale, though they will all be missed to varying degrees. However, if you could pick two or three current shows that need to start planning their endgame now, which would you choose? P.S. I've now seen my first full episodes of Miami Vice, The A-Team, Cheers, and Family Ties in my television history class. We're moving on to Moonlighting next week. It has been an exciting semester. First of all, fuck you for getting to do that in school.
No kidding.
That
and
is
so awesome.
And if you've
never seen Moonlighting, I am just frankly jealous of you getting to see Moonlighting for the first time.
Right? I looked at that list and I'm like, that was your first, that was your television history class? That was my childhood. Like, I watched those shows because they were on. I'm so jealous that you could do
sure
that in school.
You were watching those shows and somebody was telling you to do your homework.
That's
and
actually probably true.
And now this kid's watching them in school.
Yeah. Take that, Mom.
Nah.
Anyway, his question about which shows need to start playing their endgame.
All of them. I have a real problem with everything needing to run like MASH. Not every show needs to run that long. Not every concept can sustain for as long as we want to push things, because we will keep shows on the air as long as commercials are selling on them. And I understand that there's a structural difference to British television, but I've always loved how British television is okay with there being two seasons of a really good series, or two series of a really good show,
yes,
or three series at most. And that would be an extravagant, unless it's, there's a handful of British more soapy things that run forever,
yeah,
but
you do two seasons, six episodes each, then maybe a Christmas special,
mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, then move on,
and then that's it. Maybe a reunion special later.
The
that's
amount
it.
Of, yeah, yeah, of like various things I've gotten from Charlie Booker is amazing,
yeah,
and it's not just been like 12 continuously declining seasons of Black Mirror,
right?
Though Netflix is putting another one on, and that's wonderful.
I'm good with that, yeah. But I agree with you. I think that's, I'm a guy who likes endings in all my fiction, whether it's comics, TV. One of the problems I have with Walking Dead is that Kirkman was like, oh, it's going to go forever. I'm like, well, fuck you. What do I care? I'd want an ending.
Yeah.
I don't want anything to go forever. Even Terriers, much as I love it, I would not have wanted it to last like 30 seasons. I want a good ending, because I think, as Alan Moore said in his intro to, I think it was Superman, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, that endings give stories meanings.
Yeah, I can't remember the comics writer. I was an interview with a few years ago talking about not wanting to do something like Spider-Man or Batman, because you can't do a third act.
Right. Well, you can, but like, Batman has a third act. It's Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to tell you the time where you can do that is Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
Where they did that and knocked it out the park.
Or I guess
I think
one
that's
more
clever.
Day.
You can do third acts. Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Ooh, one more day. That's a rough third act. That's a bad ending, man. That's a... At least it's not Norman Osborn's O-face, but that was, that was a lead-up to the end game.
Yeah.
But that was like that week penultimate episode. We're like, oh, God, I don't know if they're going to stick this landing. Yeah, I that's the thing. I think you can. We're getting off topic a little bit here, but I think you can do third acts in long-running properties as long as you acknowledge that it's going to be an ending, and then next week we're going to go back on as if nothing happened again, as if you're in Westworld, which we'll get to later.
Yes.
Well, you know a show I love, and I don't want to see it end, but I also don't want to see it drag on too long, is Veep on HBO.
Yeah, I can see
especially
that.
Especially when you have a premise like that, you need to have kind of a logical conclusion. But that's one of those shows where I could see them cracking a joke that literally she just never can get out of the loop of politics.
Here's my pitch for a Veep ending.
Yeah.
You don't so much end as you spin off. You go like two more seasons, and then there's Selena becomes the designated survivor, and you just transition over so that you're doing the designated survivor, but Selena's the only one who survives, and then you find it like Gary's hiding in the closet with her.
I'd watch that.
That would be the best cameo next season, Keith or Sutherland.
What if I don't know if you guys are up on designated survivor. Probably not.
No.
First episode. Okay. I'm going to go back to it, though.
Do you mind if I spoil something about the second episode?
Oh, go for it.
So at the end of the second episode, the cliffhanger is, we found a survivor. And I want to be Selena Meyer. They pull out of the wreckage. And she's like a cockroach. She just can't kill her. She's going to stay in politics forever. This crossover that needs to happen.
What is, I call him Buster, but what's his character's name on
Tony? It's Tony Hale. And Tony Hale, oh, God. I'm blanking on his name.
I could see a hilarious spinoff where it just bases around him, and every week he is the aide for a different politician. But then you bring in people like Ricky Gervais and like all of these like comedians to just talk down to him for an entire episode.
Yes, yeah, totally. It would be the political version of Extras. That'd be great.
Yes. Why is there not a political version of Extras?
All right.
K Street.
One more question. Johnny Neal says, what's with all the milk on Westworld? Asking for a friend. I don't know if you guys know this joke. Johnny Neal, who was a TV dude for a long time, had an obsession with milk on TV. And every time I thought he was crazy, it would show up again. And he's right. There's all kinds of milk in Westworld. There's a guy pouring the milk on people, and it's this weird thing.
So I read this question, but we just got through watching the episode before recording. And I read that question before recording. So when there actually was a dude with a jug of milk.
Yeah.
Like I saw in the previews, like the white milky looking. No, there's literal milk in that
show.
There's
actual milk. There's a guy pouring milk on people like a fetish.
I feel like, at least on Westworld, maybe there's a separate... I feel like in TV in general, there's a massive, insane milk lobby in this country that seriously puts billboards up everywhere and gets every celebrity to have a milk mustache. And and
you know what the new milk campaign is? It's called Milk Life.
Oh, yeah. No, the commercials for that are flat out disgusting. Like, as a teenage boy, I feel like I had that happen once, and it was not okay.
Well, my generation had a perfect way to... get us to drink milk, and that was just sugary cereal.
Right,
bring that stuff back.
Chocolate frosted sugar bombs sold
there
milk
you
to me.
Go. Yeah, you want people to drink milk? Just put a ton of sugar in it.
Now, on Westworld, I feel like the milk is partly period, because they've really only got water, alcohol, or probably not really want to drink the well water, and alcohol and milk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think also in Westworld, they were driving home a repetitive script. You really only have a handful of people writing everybody's things, so all the villains... You ain't done drinking yet. Like, they did it a couple of times in the same kind of remixed behaviors.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it was happening a lot because all these guys really only have like five or six things they're going to do in that kind of scenario. Yeah. And so it kept being the milk thing.
Yeah.
It's an iconic beverage. I mean, the only thing I could think that would top it would be like black coffee.
You know, iconic beverage is actually the name I used to rap under in college.
Oh, you're iconic beverage?
I'm iconic beverage.
Oh my gosh, I got your cassette tapes, dude.
It's time for the news of the week, and I grabbed us a few things here, so I'm just going to run it down. First of all, there is a modern Robin Hood in development by Justin Lin and Alex Kurtzman. And I know it sounds like that was just word salad, but no, all those words belong there, and it's true. It's happening.
Didn't they just finish a Robin Hood series a year or so ago?
Yeah, was it like BBC?
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, it's one of the shows where the cast didn't want to be on it. Like, the guy playing Robin stopped being on the show, and they kept it going for a minute. Like, if I remember correctly, it's a show that got a little awkward with people leaving.
It's like Robin Hood without Robin Hood?
Basically.
It's like Garfield without Garfield?
Yes,
but
only,
less arrows.
Only not as good as that.
So, Lin and Kurtzman. Justin Lin, by the way, is the director who did Star Trek Beyond, as well as Fast and the Furious. Alex Kurtzman is one of the producers on Star Trek Discovery, and they are developing a brand new Robin Hood drama series for CBS.
Ooh.
It's a modern-day reinvention.
Oh.
Based on the nonfiction book A Burglar's Guide to the City by Jeff Manaw, a CBS original series will take place in contemporary metropolitan city, wherein a group of thieves aspiring to the virtues and values of the eponymous hero of English myth and legend steal from the very rich and give to the very poor, all while under the direction of one brilliant architect with a troubled past. What?
Had me at please. CBS. So.
Yeah.
I think CBS might need to go ahead and just stop.
So this is going to go as well as their modern-day Wizard of Oz.
Oh, almost certainly.
Show,
yes.
Right?
Yes, certainly.
You know how you make this work? You set it in Mexico, and it all be like kids who are stealing from like the cartels.
Isn't that called Zorro?
Oh, hell yeah.
Man, that'd
you know,
be cool.
Actually, Mexico makes me think, what you do is a Robin Hood, Oliver mix-up, mash-up.
There you go.
And you do a modern day, like that mm-hmm. maybe, okay, sure. Yeah. This is weird.
CBS would never go for that.
No.
You know what the crazy thing is? Like, I'm a heist film guy. I like heist films. So I can see a modern day Robin Hood crew. I just don't think CBS is going to do it.
No, and I don't think. Though CBS did Person of Interest and shocked me.
That's true.
But I think that owed more to Jonathan Nolan than...
It's possible, I guess. Iron Fist, we're talking about Luke Cage this week. Mm-hmm. Once a Netflix show comes on, the next one is pretty much locked in. So they gave us a date for Iron Fist on Netflix. That date is March 17th, 2017. That's too far away.
No, what's too far away is the next Jessica Jones and Daredevil seasons.
That's true, too.
That is
2018,
true.
I think.
Yeah. Ooh. I'm excited to see Iron Fist. I'm really curious how they're going to do it, because it's going to be, just like all the stuff has been on Netflix, different, but still feels like the stuff it's drawing from.
For me, even though Luke Cage was in Jessica Jones, and I'm obviously in the comics very much so ties to that character.
Yeah.
For me, Iron Fist is the other half of Luke Cage. Like, if Luke Cage was different than Daredevil and Jessica Jones before it, I'm really looking forward to seeing what Iron Fist brings, because I feel like where Cage ends up at the end of this season and where Iron Fist ends up are going to dovetail beautifully.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was really kind of hoping to see Iron Fist in the Luke Cage series.
I was a little bit. I haven't seen the last three episodes of it. I'm gathering
I'm
he doesn't
show
up. I'm
afraid it does not happen. All right. Yeah. I was hoping for some kind of nod, something, but no. I'm going to guess that Luke Cage won't be an Iron Fist either, that probably we're going to see them get his full thing, and then we'll see him team up in Defenders.
You know what I'm kind of surprised they're not doing? Because I think they totally could get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm talking about a show that we haven't even reviewed yet, and one that hasn't even come out on air.
Which is?
Which is Iron Fist and Power Man. Like, I feel like you do that show first, and then you do the Defenders after that.
Yeah,
but you
kind of
already
agree.
Set up Daredevil and Punisher.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I really would like to see a Heroes for Hire show.
I hope.
Oh God, that'd be so good.
I feel like that's what Defenders is going to be, because we know the Daughters of the Dragon are going to be in it. Like, though, I feel that's the Heroes for Hire.
I kind of also want a badass metal arm on Misty.
Misty Knight. Yes, I also wish for this. They got to get there. They got to get there, and I hope they do.
Yeah, I'm sorry she's going to lose an arm, but I want to.
As long as she doesn't lose any other part, that actress that plays Misty.
Oh, yeah.
All the casting. We'll geek out.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Ooh.
All right. There is a Let the Right One In series being developed on TNT. It's been ordered to pilot, and they have a director. They're going to have Euros Lin, who directed Doctor Who and Happy Valley. He's going to direct the pilot. I don't know how to feel about this.
I don't either.
Because TNT is not... When's the last time TNT had a great show?
Well, that too. Also, this didn't seem like a super popular movie. Obviously, like, you know, critics liked it, and so, but it didn't seem like something you would start a franchise off of, like The Exorcist.
But it's two semi-popular movies. Because there was the original and then the remake.
Oh, yeah,
remake.
Yeah, that's true.
I can actually see it as a show. In the same way that they've made shows out of, like, Fargo and Hannibal and that kind of thing. You could definitely do a version of it. It's a TV version.
I feel like, though, they've attached a name to this to get me to forget the fact that, really, if I just said to you, hey, TNT's going to do a vampire show, there's no way you're really stoked about that.
Yeah,
nobody is.
The next words out of my mouth are, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So, saying that you've bought the rights to let the right one in, it's like saying you brought a really nice car to a crash-up derby. I'm going to watch for a minute, but I assume this is going to go horribly, and I'm going to feel bad.
Speaking of coming to TV, although this one doesn't seem quite as weird, The Purge may be getting a TV show.
I'm not sure how you sustain that as a TV show, but I'm interested to find out.
I think that world is... Have you guys both seen The Purge?
I haven't seen all of them.
I've seen the first two.
I saw the first one.
I'm very familiar with the concept. I've had it all spoiled for me, but I've not seen it.
All right. Yeah. You've gone out and done The Purge yourself in Austin.
What?
With a baseball bat, right?
What?
Yeah, you've gone out and done The Purge.
Not yet.
We're purging tonight.
I'm still pretty new to Austin. I haven't gotten my first purge under my belt yet.
After 10 p.m. in Austin, it's The Purge.
Yeah, I mean, there's Midnight Swim and The Purge.
Yeah, and then The Purge,
You got it, yeah.
Then why are there still so many homeless people downtown?
They're
good at it.
You had to make it weird,
because they're good at The Purge.
Yeah, oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they will come at you, man.
That's how you know I'm really from Austin.
The Purge is a show that I thought it was going to be like a home invasion creepy movie that I didn't like. Mm-hmm. But what they did with that world and sort of the politics that they input, I really like that world. And I haven't seen the last one, but I saw the second one where they sort of turned it. They did kind of an Aliens thing where it was like much more action adventure-y. Like Frank Grillo played sort of a Punisher type dude who was out looking for revenge and sort of gets drawn into helping other people. Mm-hmm. And they definitely sort of implied the new founding fathers are out there sort of helping the Purge along. And there might be some political stuff going on, like they take out their political opponents on that night and that kind of thing. All of that kind of stuff, plus to be able to see what the Purge looks like from various social strata, various parts of the country, that kind of thing. I can definitely see an ongoing series.
I'm just wondering, like my first thought was you can't have every episode be a Purge night.
No, it's got to deal with...
But there's a lot of ways to break that story.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see how they do it.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, what if the show is about the detectives who then have to investigate this stuff after the Purge to say, okay, this is an official Purge death. Well, this one, you know, you got in under the wire, so we got to put you in jail.
I want to see the flashbacks to how it all came about and how society got to that point. I want to see the politics side
of
them arguing about it.
A bunch of pilgrims stabbing themselves?
Yes, the pilgrims, the first Purge.
Roanoke's the first Purge,
But it's James DeMonaco, who is the director, says that it's in development, and he says that basically it's at the point where they're starting to get like storylines and money's being talked about. He says it's not an anthology. This is kind of an anthology, more of an interwoven anthology. He said, they came to me about a TV show. My idea is you do 6 or 7 storylines, and I would kind of intercut them and use flashbacks. He explained that the idea of having 10-hour TV thing is the one thing you really can't do in films is, just because of mere real estate and time, you can't get in the nuance and complexity that would drive someone to commit a terrible act on this night, whether it's revenge or out of passion. But what might be interesting in a TV show is with a flashback narrative, if you start on Purge Night, but you go back to show how people have gotten to where they are, where you see a couple that's gone haywire on this night, but let's show everything that led up to this moment of a husband trying to kill his wife, the cheating or the accusations of cheating or money problems. He says it'd be interesting to show those arcs. I can totally see this.
I can agree with that. I mean, I think that could be exceptionally well done. If you saw a really brutal purge act, and then several episodes later you realize in the course of this nonchalant kind of flashback storyline you're watching, you go, oh my God, that guy that just walked into the room.
That's the psycho killer.
That's the dude from later. And then you're really going to watch everything he does. I can see how that would really work.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can flip the script a little bit and do that kind of thing, which is always kind of fun. Lost did that really well.
And he's right. You can't do that in a movie.
Yeah.
You can't stop the movie to go follow small characters. They're whatever you're following is going to end up being a bigger theme than you mean it to be.
Did you say anything about how many episodes they're getting?
They're talking about, I think it's going to be a 10 episode. They're probably talking about doing a, you know, it'd have to be streaming or cable network. It'd have to be Netflix, maybe Starz, one of those guys. So. Speaking of Netflix, there's a new trailer out for Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. Did you guys watch this?
Yes.
I did not see this.
I haven't watched the trailer.
The trailer's
yet.
Wonderful. It really
it's
is
Patrick
great.
Patrick Warburton, right?
Yes.
He is playing Lemony Snicket?
Yes.
And Neil Patrick Harris is playing Count Olaf.
Yeah, the trailer's great. It's just Warburton on the set admonishing you to not watch the show.
That's amazing.
It's beautifully done. It's really, really nicely done.
I'm really looking forward to this. I've not read the series.
Neither have I.
But I love Patrick Warburton. I love Neil Patrick Harris. And it's coming up on Friday the 13th of January.
Oh, nice.
So very nice. I'm excited for this. Final one bit of news. They're working on a Disneyland TV series planned by the Agent Carter showrunners.
Ooh.
So the plan here is that it is a pitch that is based on the Disney theme park mythology. The duo is co-producing with former Disney executive tour producer Jason Reed, and there's not a lot of details. So are they going to follow Walt Disney, like creating Disneyland? Are they going to follow, is it going to do like Disney Shared Universe, where it's like, you know, Space Mountain and Big Thunder Mountain Railroad and all that kind of stuff? I could see both of those being viable.
I care about this substantially less. My only real thought on this is what we're doing instead of Agent Carter.
Well, don't we already have this show? It's called Westworld.
All right, we are back, and we are talking first Westworld, then Luke Cage. And I want to start with a question we got about Westworld. Dennis McElwain asks, everybody is singing the praises of Westworld. However, I think it is too shiny. Am I unfairly comparing it to Deadwood? Sorry I could not make it out to your store while I was in Austin, Randy, but Fantastic Fest made me tired. That's good. I'm sorry that you didn't make it too, Dennis, but I'm glad I didn't know. I'd have been much more disappointed. Now I'm like, oh, I miss Dennis, but I'd have been sad if you said that while you were in Austin. I was like, come on, man. You can't come and visit me while you're here. So this is the right place to do it, because now I can't guilt you. The question is, I think we all three loved Westwood, right? Westworld.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And did you guys like Deadwood? Were you guys Deadwood fans?
I love Deadwood.
Okay. I didn't watch Deadwood, actually.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't compare this to Deadwood.
No.
This is a different one of the things I think is really striking about Westworld, and we just came off watching the pilot, like right before we recorded this, is that I'm watching it and I'm thinking, you know, they've got like a black family that is like they're one of the guests and they've come in there, and I'm thinking the genius of doing Westworld is you can do the Western with all the problematic stuff of racism and
yes,
and all the stuff that goes with doing a period Western where it's like, yeah, this is what happened, but do we really want to see this?
Yeah, because there's a character arc on Deadwood that's amazing, but I'm not even going to say the character's name.
Yeah.
And it's true to time period, but...
But yeah, because it's a science fiction concept, you can do all the Western tropes without having to include sort of the nasty bits for historical accuracy.
And that's where I don't feel like this is too shiny versus Deadwood.
Yeah.
Deadwood was trying to be incredibly realistic, even down to the insane amount of swearing, which there was a website that tracked the amount of cocksucker and cunt that they said on on Deadwood. But only one person ever says MF.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why I hesitate on that one, but only one person ever says motherfucker.
It wasn't a popular turn of phrase for them.
It was not out. It was not...
That guy who said it on the show, he started it.
They said the actor that played EB, who was... Larry, my brother, Daryl, my other
yeah.
brother. Daryl, my brother, Larry, my other brother.
Yeah, and is also on yeah. J.F. Sebastian for Blade Runner.
Yes.
And
he just said it in the course of his monologue, and they left it because it worked so well.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it was anachronistic, and they really did try to stay period accurate.
Right.
Westworld is a constructed world.
Yes.
And that's not hidden, and that's not that's an allusion pretty much only to the robots that are in it, but the people that are the hosts, but the people that are walking around, it's dirty enough to sell you on it, but it's not so dirty that people would be grossed out and leave.
Right. Yeah, there's not maggot-ridden corpses in the street.
There's still the one guest that whose wife is just obviously disgusted and chewing away flies the entire time.
Yes.
Like, it's already too dirty for her to be a vacation spot.
Right. Do you think she was probably like, can they not do anything about the flies? How much are we paying for this?
I really had to wonder, like, can they not program the flies to leave someone alone?
Oh, that was my question. Do you think the flies are robots? I figured they were just there because it was an open air.
So
oh,
cool.
Shit, it's not an open air park or anything.
Oh,
right?
And then our little wink and nod at the very end would be totally, if that was
no,
a robot
then that's
fly.
Why, that's why they're yeah. not robot flies.
Yeah, you're right. It can't be robot flies.
That's
gotta be
real. Story beat doesn't work then.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back. Let's jump back. So this has been in development for a while.
Yes.
And there were some worries that maybe they had to like do some reshoots and rescripting and that kind of thing. And everybody was nervous about, well, is this going to be another big, like John from Cincinnati, you know, big expensive failure? And I think people were kind of primed for that, but I loved this first episode.
I really, really enjoyed it.
And I think
oh, yeah, that's television.
This is they're doing some interesting stuff where they start with showing us the Western aspect. And if you're watching Westworld, you know where it's going. But they started with the presumption of sort of the audience is on board for the ride, and we don't know. Like, did you guys know that James Marsden's character was, or James Marsden's character was
a host?
A host,
no.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
A host is what they call the robots.
Yeah.
When Teddy
yeah.
fires on the man in black, yeah. that's the moment where I went, what is going on? And yeah. then it clicked, oh, crap, one of you's real and one's not. Mm-hmm.
They're really good at sort of faking you out on this kind of stuff because they show the train, and he's there. He's arriving along with the other guests, the newcomers, which is what the robots call.
And there's already a guest talking to him.
There's already a guest
oh, yeah.
talking.
Spoiler
yeah.
alert, by the way. That was one of the good reveals from
yes,
the show.
Yes, yeah. The way that they... Oh, yeah, there's going to be lots of spoilers about Westworld here. Just warn people about that. The way that they introduce him is like there's a guy talking and he's like, yeah, I went white hat, brought the kids, and then last time I was evil. Best 2 weeks of my life.
Just went straight evil the whole time.
Yeah.
And so you're programmed, and he steps off the train looking around, he bumps into a guy and goes for his gun, and you're really programmed to think, oh, this is a guy, his first time in Westworld.
Well, and there's no one else around him, so the sheriff looks at him
yes.
and says, you look like a man who put his iron to it about joining a posse.
Yep.
And we see that sheriff make that exact same proclamation and posse gathering
yes.
later, only Marsden is two steps ahead of an actual guest.
And he joins up with the quest
and
line.
And the guest gets the line.
I think one of the things I really love about this, Westworld was a 1973 film. I've never seen it.
Yul Brynner. Yeah, it's great.
You've seen it. Okay. Because they can do different things here because in 1973, there was no internet. There was no massive multiplayer games. And Westworld is like a combination of a massive multiplayer game and like a vacation experience.
It had a yeah. lot. I feel like the movie had a lot more vacation experience vibe to it. And whereas this can't help in society now feel like massive multiplayer gaming.
Yeah.
Or
because they've got the quest lines. They've got the NPCs spouting off the same dialogue to hook people in. They've got, I mean, yeah, it's very video gamey, which
yes.
again in 1973 would not have been a thing. So I think they really evolved the concept, and people can ask questions like, why remake something? You know, why do a remake? Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, the technology behind it and the society behind it has changed so much.
Well, you know, I think one of the most topical things, you look at the political climate right now, and, you know, there's a lot of concern that, like, you know, a large portion of Americans just have a lot of hate in their heart and a
yeah.
lot of, I don't know if deviancy is the right word for it, but when you watch this show, it really does make you wonder, like, the people who do the evil shit in this world, who, you know, are raping and
yeah.
killing. Like, if given the option, would the everyday American not want to pay to go have a vacation where he could get some of that out of his system?
It's kind of similar to The Purge.
Well, and that's here's
a little
the
bit, yeah.
here's the question. Have you guys played Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I consider myself pretty moral, nice. I mean, I'm an atheist. I'm not a moral person, but
you guys
I'm going to hell, of
course. The whole game.
But I've murdered hookers. You just do it in Grand Theft Auto, right? I mean, that's the thing you do. And so this is Grand Theft Auto, but on a or Red Dead Redemption on a scale where you're actually experiencing it. So I look at all this and I'm like, I look at Ed Harris's character and I'm like, oh, that guy's a monster. But at the same time, you're like, none of these things are real to him. This is like him playing a video game.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that they react so real would give most people pause. But maybe once you've programmed yourself to not think about it.
And that's what the programmer brings up. Or the writer,
yeah.
rather, not
yeah.
the programmer, but the writer brings up at one point when they're having an issue with the updates and says flat out something completely true. Nobody wants these things to be that realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, look at it. Riggle is about as realistic. The wife of the guy that
guns him down.
She points it when look at it. Riggle. That's about as I think realistic as people want to get. And his idea of no, you should dial it back just a hair, so that people know it's a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you don't really want people to wonder.
I like the sort of the meta level that they examine this on, like the looking at these guys talking about, you know, the reveries, the Anthony Hopkins character, who clearly he dresses like he's in the Old West. To him, this is where he wants to live. And you get the sense that maybe he wants them to come to life and rebel.
I feel like he does. Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. He's definitely got an agenda. And so we see him, we see what they how they program the robots and how they talk to the robots at the end of every night and that kind of stuff. And then we also see the writer in one of the funniest moments of the show when he's written this beautiful monologue for his villain and one of the players just comes up and shoots him in the face.
and it's a massive win for him because they pulled 200 actors out of an ongoing script and this guy has managed to write it back into shape where it won't break narratively and then, yeah.
And proving right exactly what the corporate woman had said to him, which is like, nobody cares. Yeah. Nobody cares about your stories.
I am not a huge Western fan. I did enjoy the Deadwood. It was amazing. That's just a beautifully acted and well-written show.
Yeah.
But in general, I was not the kid that wanted to watch Rifleman. I didn't watch endless Westerns. They're not inherently an interesting genre to me.
Sure.
So Westworld, the actual skin on that game is the least interesting thing to me about watching that show.
Right.
I knew going in that there'd be all these cool Western vistas, and it is a gorgeous show.
Oh, man, they shot in Monument Valley, and it looks
beautiful. I was wondering where they shot or if that was all green screen.
No, it's shot in Utah, and it's just beautiful. Yeah, beautiful.
But that wasn't so much what drew me to it. I don't really want to watch a Western. What impressed me and once is going to keep me trying to watch that show is the multiple levels of what people want out of those robots and what people want out of this world and not just the nefarious, what does the corporation want of it or what is shareholders or management, but Anthony Hopkins, I feel like, is a man who knows what he's doing. He's been making these things more and more realistic past the point of the customer's demands.
Yeah.
And I feel like his ultimate goal is to break them in a way that they become sentient.
Yeah.
Like Harold waking up the machine in Person of Interest. Like, I feel like he wants him to come to life knowing full well that their first move will be to turn and kill him.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't know why or in his backstory, but I feel like he feels he owes that. Or he feels...
But we know he feels a loyalty to them because the first time we see him, he's down in cold storage talking to the very first one.
Whoever that actor is,
oh man,
those motions were flawless.
Because he plays it like a robot. Yeah,
I really hope.
And like a slightly different robot than the other robots.
Yeah.
You could tell he's like a couple of versions crappier. But they were. I don't know where they found that guy. He is impressive.
He's probably done some dance training or something because he had the training.
Popping and locking.
Yeah, popping and locking in those guys. Yes.
Man, do I want to see him pop and lock.
In full costume?
In full costume.
It'd be weird a guy who looks like your dad popping and locking.
When he lays down in the body bag and zips it up from the inside.
Yeah.
There were a lot of pullback creepy moments for me in that show. And, and not all the ones I thought they weren't the gore ones or the face blown out or anything by bullets.
I do want to call out some of the people for like Evan Rachel Wood, who plays the lead Dolores. She plays that robotic really good. They have that bit where they debrief her and she drops the emotion, then she drops the accent, and it's just she turns it off like a switch, and it's just really, really good performance.
Yep.
And I also loved the guy who played her dad.
I was about to say her father really owned
when
that.
He has that monologue at the end is just creepy as hell. And
the twitchy seizure breakdowns on everybody, the droop face, those were incredibly good.
Yeah.
The sheriff, even the dad twitching,
they
all did it consistently. So they weren't twitching exactly the same way, but you felt immediately that that's the same glitch or that's a similar glitch.
By the way, Jeffrey Wright is playing a big role here as sort of the definitely on the spectrum. Like engineer who's taken over from Anthony Hopkins' character. And I loved his performance here because also last time I saw him that I remember was in Boardwalk Empire when he plays Dr. Narcisse.
I haven't seen it in Boardwalk Empire.
And he's this really scary, creepy dude. And it's like 180 degrees different from what he's doing here.
I guess the last time I saw him was Hunger Games.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But
I always think of him from James Bond.
Yeah, Felix Leiter.
Yeah, yeah, he was great in Bond. He will always be Basquiat to me.
Who's that?
Jean-Michel Basquiat was a painter in the 80s that came up with Warhol, but they did a biopic of him, and it's Wright and Benicio del Toro.
Interesting,
and
okay.
And Claire Forlani.
Did they do another one of those? Because I saw a really awesome Basquiat biopic when I was in college.
That was it. Wait, I bet 96.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
No way.
He must have been a bit younger at that
and
point.
He played,
crazy hair and
he
stuff,
played Martin Luther King in Boycott, which was an HBO movie about the bus boycotts. It was really well done.
Huh.
Nice.
But it's a great cast. It looks really good. Also, I want to throw out a shout out for the music. Ramin Djawadi, who does the music on Game of Thrones, also did Pacific Rim. Mm-hmm. He does this here, and I love the intro music. I love he's come up with sort of a techno-western theme song. Mm-hmm. I like all the orchestral stuff, but we were all watching it, and that Black Hole Sun on the player piano started playing through, and we all just kind of looked around, because it's like that thing where, like, it's one of the geniuses of Westworld, which is that you can do period Western, and yet at the same time, you're doing something completely modern. And you know, some programmer nerd would be like, what if we put a Soundgarden song on the player piano? And it's a great little rendition. And then when they have the big shootout, they use that orchestral version of Paint It Black, which I thought was a fantastic
song.
Yeah, that was really good. Reminded me of one of my favorite shootouts, Face Off, where they do the shootout to the Wizard of Oz.
The other thing I want to mention is the time loop thing here. Where they start the day, we see Dolores wake up.
I was going to say that too. Yeah,
I don't know about you guys. I have a love hate with time loop shows. Like, do you remember the Star Trek episode that ended with Kelsey Grammer as like the time lost starship? Like, it was Next Generation, and like I want to say it was Geordi, or maybe it was, I don't remember who it was. Somebody gets up, goes to the bridge. A few things happen. A ship comes out of warp, crashes into the Enterprise. It explodes. They go back to the beginning. They do it again.
Mm-hmm.
They ran that loop, I swear, like 10 times, and they changed nothing.
Yeah, like, I feel like anytime Q came on the show, there was some, like, aspect of that.
I just, if you're going to do a time loop, it's got to change or be from a different point of view, because over and over again, once you've done it twice, we get it.
Well, I'll tell you.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, where this show is going to succeed where, you know, other shows have failed is that you have the Groundhog's Day aspect, where, like, the same thing's happening over and over again, which represents unique opportunities for the people who are visiting this.
To change it.
Yeah, we're starting to see that with Ed Harris's character.
Yeah.
But then, also the thing we were talking about earlier, it's so interesting how these characters, these robots in this story, they have a set amount of dialogue.
Yeah.
So the same lines are going to be delivered, but maybe not in the same order.
That was fantastically done. They remix what was a meet cute kind of, or I guess re-meet cute.
Well,
like, oh, you made it back. And they took all those lines and remixed them into an incredibly poignant scene. And that was... It was really subtly done. I'm really glad you caught that. I don't know. It hadn't clicked until you asked that.
It was the second time I watched it that clicked me. But yeah, they saved it. Because these guys have a certain amount of programming, a certain amount of language, that gets reused no matter what the circumstances are. And so as a result, with the time loop, even though we were seeing it more than once, every time we saw it, they added a new angle. They showed us another character reacting to it. Or it changed.
If someone missed a step, the person behind you got that line instead of you. I love the constant reinforcement that the programmers know everything they're programmed to do.
Yes.
She moves, one of the robots moves a pinky slightly differently on her lip while she's touching her face, and Jeffrey Reitling's, what was that?
Yeah.
or when they're watching the father have a breakdown back at the lab, and they go, no, none of those behaviors were programmed.
Yeah.
But I love this idea that even though it is an incredibly large number of actions, these guys really do intimately know.
Yeah.
You can't move your arm like that. The same way you recognize someone's gait when they walk.
Yeah.
They would know each of these robots by what they... Oh, you're not on build 10. You're on build 8. You walk differently.
Yeah. And also, I think that the technology stuff is going to be interesting. Because we were wondering aloud, and they don't really get into it. Like, what is the technology that allows people to go into this world and not be susceptible to the same bullets and guns as everyone else? Because are they putting their brain patterns in a robot that is then not given the vulnerabilities? Are the guns somehow only triggering are they triggering an effect on the robots? Do they have squibs built in throughout them? No matter where you shoot them, these light guns, they blow up. I mean,
is the actual person there, or is that like a projection?
Or is it a projection
of themselves?
Yes. And what's the deal with Ed Harris's Man in Black? I still think it's possible he's a robot. But just to throw back to the Yul Brynner of it all, where he's like the guy who's like the badass gunfighter who's gone bad.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's trying to figure out his world. But I think it was Les, was it you who said you thought he's a guy who's been playing the game.
I think he's
a while.
Just a guy who's been playing the game a while and wants to get a lot further in the game, because we know, I mean, when I saw Westworld as a kid, I played a lot of D&D, and I feel like those of us who had played tabletop role playing games saw this as the way massive multiplayer games are. This show coming out now, the entire world understands how those games work now. Yeah. Everybody has played a massive multiplayer game somewhere, or at least is really, really familiar with it.
Yeah.
And so now when I watch this show, I know that those aspects are there, and so we start to know what people do in Second Life.
Yeah.
And we start to know how cliques form and how people form weird little pocket games. And I guarantee the guys that are rich enough to go to Westworld, there's a set above them of guys who can go to Westworld longer and more regularly.
Yeah.
And then there's a set of guys maybe who haven't left Howard Hughes style in a long time.
What if that's Ed Harris's character? What if he's a guy who's so rich?
How tall is this casino?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Huh. All right. Well, we're definitely in for more. Let's talk about Luke Cage on Netflix. And I've got a question here. This question comes from Daniel Wallace. He says, "So, gentlemen, where would you rank Luke Cage compared to the rest of Netflix's Marvel seasons? Personally, I would rank it close to Daredevil Season 1, but not quite above it." So where do you guys rank Les, where do you rank Luke Cage?
It's so fresh and I haven't finished it out.
Yeah.
So there's still a little wiggle room on
it. Sure, yeah, you're early. We won't hold you to this.
I would say that my top three are Jessica Jones, Daredevil Season 1, and Luke Cage, and the 2 and 3 of that might flip.
Okay.
Right. I have a ridiculous crush on Kristen Ritter.
Sure.
And Jessica Jones I thought was exceptionally well done. I loved everything about that show. The villain, David Tennant, was spectacular.
Where do you put Daredevil Season 2?
The first half of it?
Yeah.
Would be 3 or 4. Would
down at
would,
the bottom.
Would I mean it? It's still exceptional. The second half of Daredevil Season 2 was not as cool to me.
It goes off the rails a little bit. Although it does bring back the Kingpin, which we needed.
Yes, but I feel like it had two different shows going. I agree. There should have been an Elektra season, and there should have been a Punisher season.
Yeah,
and splitting them in the middle made it really strange, particularly for a show that was designed to drop at once.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Kyle? You know, so for me, Daredevil's still up on the top. And the thing that was disappointing about the second season, which I still really liked the second season of Daredevil.
Yeah. Loved it.
Yeah.
But you showed me how in the first season you can make an awesome Daredevil show and you don't need all of the side. Like, you need Kingpin and Daredevil and you can make a badass show.
Yep.
And you could have made an awesome second season too. And Elektra and the Punisher didn't have to be such big part of that. But, you know, for me, Daredevil's number one, Jessica Jones, number two. Luke Cage, it's an easy number three, but I think just like Daredevil Season 2, the second half of this season for me doesn't hit nearly as hard as the first
half. So let me tell you this, and this is not what I've seen in conventional wisdom. Luke Cage is my least favorite of the Netflix series so far. And it's not that I don't think it's very good. I think it's very good. But Jessica Jones is number one for me. And Daredevil Season 1, and then probably Daredevil Season 2, then probably Luke Cage. But the reason I rank it this way is I realized as I was watching Luke Cage, and this isn't really a problem of Luke Cage so much as a problem of Marvel's Netflix shows for me. My lane is CW superhero TV and Marvel Cinematic Universe. I like the costumes. I like a little bit of humor. I like that sort of swagger of here's a talking raccoon with a gun. And the Netflix shows do kind of what the DC does on their movies a little bit. It's let's make this realistic. Let's make it gritty. This is the cable drama version of the Marvel Universe. And I miss the cartoonishness of it a little bit, to be honest.
And that doesn't bother me on this, but I think you're exactly right. It just, I'm fine with it on Marvel's Netflix television.
Yes,
Because Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. television, I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. I thought the last season was their best so far, and I haven't minded the Ghost Rider stuff so far. But that show doesn't quite work for me.
Right.
Where if you're going to go cartoony, go full bore.
Yes.
Flash and Legends of Tomorrow and Arrow all work in their own little way for me in a way that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of seems to try to ape and doesn't play out. Whereas it's kind of sad that Marvel Netflix is basically just constantly showing Warner Brothers DC movie verse. Like, no, here, this is how you do this.
Yeah, if you want,
it can be utterly realistic, and you can only show the costume, the original costume, as a throwaway gag.
Yeah,
you can get away with all of this. Stop fucking it up.
Yeah, if you want to do dark and realistic, you can do dark and realistic, and it can still be
and
fun
can still
and
be
true
fun.
To the characters.
Yeah, because Luke Cage has a lot of bright colors.
There are so many nods to the comics in here.
Oh, yeah, big
I mean, names and characters and little in-jokes. I mean, that costume moment where he comes out, I was cheering.
I look like a fool, yeah.
And I love, yeah, I don't even mind that they made fun of it. Because, yeah, the problem with Luke Cage is the Luke Cage that a lot of us grew up loving, the Where's My Money, Honey, Hero for Hire, is very problematic in modern day.
Yeah.
And so you can't
I've heard a lot of people
it.
Complain that he's not the shit-talking ass-whooper that he is, that he gets so dragged into it, and then he's kind of a stick-in-the-mud moralizer.
But you couldn't do that, Luke Cage. That Luke Cage is racist on TV right now.
That'd be a blaxploitation show.
Yeah, you can't do it. So I think that they did the right amount of callbacks. I do want to mention, I have a few things I want to talk about, and you guys throw in here. So I took notes watching this thing as I was, I'm like, thoughts and thoughts and thoughts. Okay, Misty Knight. Played by Simone Missick, who is really, really good.
She's pretty hot, too.
She's really good. She's smart. She's capable. They give her that sort of Hannibal-esque Will Graham can profile people. Thought that was kind of a neat thing to give her. However, she does not have a bionic arm, and she's not like a swaggery ass-kicker. And that character, the character from the comics, would have felt out of place in the show.
Yeah.
You can't. She can't be the shit talking ass kicker with a bionic arm.
No, in fact, in the first couple of episodes, they give her kind of shit talker lines, and they don't work for me.
Yeah,
she was. I had a problem with Misty Knight in the first couple episodes.
Yeah,
just because she felt like this is a larger problem I have with the writing in the first episode.
Yeah,
and this I'm trying to remember the name of the showrunner for the show.
Chio. Oh man, I'm blanking on it too.
Blanking on his name, and I'm going to say it wrong.
Anyway,
he wrote Notorious. He's written a bunch of other stuff, but he wrote the movie Notorious.
Okay,
which I really enjoyed. I like biopics about music. That movie had a couple of the hokiest lines. I mean, Puffy looks at Biggie at one point and like grabs him by the shoulders and goes, "We're going to change the world with rap," and it's just nearly that bad a line. And so I frequently feels like. In his writing that he gets the theme right and he gets the characters right, and then they just say like the abstract idea of what they're going to do.
Yes.
It's too on the nose and it's too hard on its sleeve.
The writer, by the way, is Cheo Hadari Coker.
Yes.
And you're right, because I actually liked, again, I keep having to qualify by saying I love this show, but I'm just going to nitpick, because there's some scenes in the later episodes, like 10 to 12, which I don't know if you've gotten to yet.
10 is the last
one. Where the cop stuff is really cliched. Like, there's the aggressive SWAT guy who wants to go in, and the gruff inspector, and someone actually comes up to her and says, "Inspector, it's the chief," and hands her the phone, and she gives a speech about how everything goes through her. It's like, it's the most cliched cop dialogue I've ever seen. And I was like, what is this doing here? Like, every so often it falls in that place where I'm like, you're doing like Breaking Bad via Luke Cage here. Why am I getting NCIS dialogue every now and then?
Yeah.
Well, and I didn't notice that stuff till towards the end of the run, like about after episode 6 or 7, where it just seemed like a lot more of that was coming up. The stories, the pacing even seemed to get like dragged out a little further.
Yes.
All telling me that, it almost seemed as if they had a lot of really good content for about 7 episodes, and then they're like, let's drag this out a few more.
That has been a consistent complaint about Marvel's Netflix shows, and I think it's true of all of them, even Jessica Jones.
I think there should be 10 episodes and not 12 or 13.
Yes, 10 episodes at the most. Look at Stranger Things. It was 8 episodes. It was perfect.
Perfect. Oh, that should not have gone any longer than it did.
And I think 8 to 10 episodes. I mean, it seems crazy in a world where 22-episode series still happen that we're saying 13 is too much.
Uh-huh.
But 13 might be too much. Like, of course, you know, we all admitted earlier to being a British show model people. Yeah. Like, I love me a short-time show.
And I feel like I have to reiterate that even ranking Marvel's Netflix shows or nitpicking them, they've not made a bad show.
No, they're all good.
They're all all watchable and all incredibly fun. I mean, they get the characters I love up on screen correctly.
I watched this in like 3-4 hour chunks, so clearly it had its hooks in me.
Well, I'll tell you two things where if you rate the show on these two items alone, they definitely go to the top of the list, even above like the great villain in Jessica Jones and the awesome character building in Daredevil season one.
Yeah,
that is one, the world building.
Yeah,
like I feel like out of all the shows, Harlem is a character like these people, they feel real, like you feel like they could each pop up and have their own episode.
Yeah, and it's modern Harlem, but it's 70s influenced modern Harlem. That whole discussion they were having about books,
that was
when they're talking about their authors, I fell in love with the show at that point.
And there's when they were talking Walter Mosley and Easy Rollins, which that's just a great character. But somebody's put together a list of just all the books mentioned and read. Him carrying Ellison's Invisible Man. It's just great. Nice. It's just great touches.
Also, let's talk about the bad guys, because what you were just saying. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say two things. The other one, which is the big one, and I feel like this, I'm going to spin us off on a totally other tangent if I mention this.
Go ahead.
The music.
Yeah, the music.
Yes.
Oh, my.
And the music had been hyped going in. I was really looking forward to the music. I didn't. I knew each episode was named for a Gangstar track, and I knew that there would be all this hip-hop, and Method Man was involved in the music and all this. I did not expect the club acts to be that good.
Oh, man.
I had to look up all the club acts. Every one of them killed it.
That guy was like that guy in the maybe the third or fourth episode.
George
episode.
Barkley? Or?
The guy was like the resurrection of James Brown.
Oh,
he came to South by
Charles
Southwest
Bradley.
This year. Charles Bradley, yeah.
That guy killed
No lie. I got to see him at South by Southwest this year.
That I want to say he great. Just announced that he has stomach cancer.
Funniest thing. Oh, sorry about the stomach cancer. But other funniest thing about him, his entire band, nothing but white hipsters.
Yes.
Oh, that's funny.
Weirdly, they remind. There was a band in the late 90s, Robert Bradley's Blackwater Revival. That was similar, and it was a band of white kids in Detroit, and Robert Bradley was literally a homeless dude sleeping outside their practice space that sang along, and they dragged him into the band. But,
wow!
So I when I saw Bradley, I was like, that can't be the same dude from the 90s. He cannot still be kicking.
That guy is so good. I'm so glad
Charles
that you
Bradley
guys
kills
mentioned
him.
It.
Yeah, he was great. But all the performances are really good. Mm-hmm. Harlem's Paradise. So it's a music club, so that we can do these performances where you know how Game of Thrones has sex position, where they have sex going on, so that people don't get bored by the
sex position.
People will talk. People like tell you what's going on in the show, and there's sex going on, so people don't get bored. They did music position. So by all the exposition, like the characters talking to each other, and there was this backdrop of this great music performance going on.
All the info dumps between the cousins
is accompanied by amazing music.
Did you see the story that came out today about why there's a swear jar?
No. I assume that was a Luke Cage thing.
No.
Okay.
So, Coker's right.
The writer.
There's a story from Paisley Park that Prince had a swear jar at Paisley Park for years. And
if you
were at Prince's house and you swore, you had to put money in the swear jar, because that's Prince.
Sure.
And so they wrote the swear jar into the show, fully intending to show Prince the first two episodes and then beg him to play Harlem's Paradise in the finale.
I'd heard about that, and then he died.
And so they kept the swear jar for the whole show.
Oh, that's
out of homage.
That's great.
I just assumed, because
I just thought it was part of
the gag in the comics is that Luke Cage doesn't swear because of his,
that's
like,
why
his grandma
there,
or
fiddle faddle.
That's why he says Sweet Christmas or fiddle faddle. By the way, if you guys are
there's no fiddle faddle in this.
I assume fiddle faddle, the company. Might have sued.
If you're not reading Power Man and Iron Fist by David Walker at Marvel, get you to a comic shop.
Do you know anybody?
Where can I
find these comics?
Yeah, if you go to Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas, they will hook you up.
I heard the owners did.
But
they got them.
Power Man and Iron Fist, the first trade just came out. It's got beautiful art by Sanford Green, and it is, no lie, 100% what I want out of Power Man.
Does that trade have the Deadpool Daredevil crossover?
No, I think it's just that'll be in the next one.
That's kind of fun if you can get your hands on that.
Yeah.
I think it's like $5, but the thing's
as
thick as
$10.
It's $10.
It's $10 because it's like it's a 4-issue crossover. In
one
book.
And it's super thick. It's worth it.
It's
a lot of fun.
Deadpool, Power Man, Iron Fist, and somebody else, and it's all the creative team. Oh, Daredevil.
Daredevil, yeah.
And it's the writers from those books writing chapters of the book.
My favorite part in that is Matt Murdock sitting at his desk, and like Deadpool comes in. And he's like, what smells like sriracha and asshole?
but Going back to, I just thought the swear jar was a thing. I didn't know that was a reference. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was some interview today that I just thought was great.
So circling back, and I do want to say that Mike Coulter's great as Luke Cage. I love him as Luke Cage. However, I think the bad guys are the most interesting part of the show here.
Yep, Cottonmouth just owns it.
Oh man.
Owns
that guy,
it.
So good. Mahershala Ali, I probably mispronounced that, but that's as close as I'm going to get. He was in Treme, Alphas, House of Cards. He played Remy.
4400.
Mm-hmm. I first saw him in the 4400. And I thought, this can't be the same guy.
Yep.
Oh, man. We were calling him Reggie the other night on another podcast where we talked about this. Sure enough, it was Remy. And we were calling him Reggie all night long.
you Reggied up your Remy.
Remy. Duh.
Yeah, but he's fantastic as Cornell Stokes.
He brings a scary intensity to his scenes. He looks like he's about to just snap.
And he's,
The laugh, too.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, well placed.
Well, and he's the good guy. In his mind, he's the good guy in this show.
Yes. Yeah,
he's just doing what's necessary.
He is no different than any other heroes of Harlem from the past. And honestly, he's so much better than the people that raised him.
Yeah.
And it does make you ask, like, towards the end, you're like, well, he was doing bad stuff. But, I mean, out of his group, he kind of had the moral high ground in a lot of instances.
Compared to Willis Stryker, who's played by Eric LeRae Harvey, who was Dunn Pursley on Boardwalk Empire, by the way.
Yeah.
That guy's a nutcase. That guy's crazy, and he's murderous as hell.
You're talking about Diamondback?
Yeah.
That was one of the few like big, like, I'm going to forgive you this, Luke Cage, but what the hell? That felt so pat, Sona. Like, Diamondback turns up, and it's his freaking brother, and we just haven't known this whole time.
Yeah.
Everybody's named for snakes. Nobody's noticed it. Cottonmouth and Diamondback haven't compared this before. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think they could have done that. But you do that with your season finale.
I'll say this.
You don't do that in
when you showed up, I just had a moment of going, y'all are related? What the shit world is
they
this?
They did throw some exposition early on in that episode.
I'll say this, Les, because you have not seen the last few. They go back and they give us backstory to where Diamondback's hatred comes from. And it's all comic-based, by the way. This is all from the comics.
Okay.
Cool. So some of the cliche is probably the fault of the comics.
It just felt kind of out of the blue and sewn up immediately.
Yeah. Well, they do bring something else from the comics.
Yeah, that's true.
That, or are you about to mention it?
No, but I want to talk about the Diamondback thing real quick, though, because I feel like when they did it, they go, in the final episode, they do this flashback to them as kids, and it's kind of heartbreaking because you see them, they were like best buds, and now they're at each other's throats, and it really breaks your heart a little bit, and it would have broken my heart and been much more effective if they had introduced it like 8 episodes before. Mm-hmm. I felt like if you want, and I think that's where Les's point is well taken, is that if you want to introduce this guy who's his brother and who's his enemy, you got to start laying those seeds. Do those flashbacks
a little
earlier. It can't
be after you've shot him a couple times.
Yeah,
I mean,
no. Yeah.
This guy's already been up on a rooftop, sniped at him. He's the one that has the weapon from the incident.
Yeah.
Like,
and he's crazy dangerous, but he just comes off as a crazy nutbar.
And he's much scarier and much more effective when he's the villain people are talking about, where you don't see him on
screen. I genuinely felt like I had missed a scene or an episode or something where we'd introduce the person who's stalking you down the street now. It was like suddenly Michael Myers turned a corner and started chasing Luke Cage, and I went...
He was even more interesting.
I went to the bathroom. What the shit?
They deepen him a lot in those last few episodes. And again, I think your point is well taken. It should have been done well before. Yeah, go ahead.
So here's a big, big upset I have about the Diamondback character.
Yeah.
In the final episode, when they reveal his super suit.
Yeah.
That was pretty cheesy.
It was. But you know what? I was so happy because it looked like the comic book version of his costume.
Yeah, and they nailed Luke Cage's comic book costume too, but he wore it as a joke for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, that's true.
And this guy tried to do a fight scene with it.
It felt like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had made their presence known to Luke Cage.
Yeah.
It really did, and that was kind of too bad.
And there was a few moments in the show where they did have the effects got to that like kind of cheesy Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. level.
Sometimes it did,
but
yeah.
But when you have a character who's got abilities that are on this level, it's really hard to have the budget to
they had a couple
stretch it each up. So.
There were enough that were beautifully subtle, like him jumping out of he breaks into the apartment, Scarf's apartment, and jumps out the window right before Misty comes up the stairs.
Yeah.
And he lands and cracks the concrete and walks off.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful effect. I was so happy that the concrete just craters underneath him and he walks away.
Yeah, there's kind of an inconsistency to it, and it's kind of too bad because when they do it right, they really do it right.
Yeah.
When he's like lifting up the fridge and pops his place and that kind of stuff, it's really well done.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about the other guy is Theo Rossi, who plays Shades.
Yes, Juice
From Sons of Anarchy. That was a great arc too. He was sort of a henchman dude, but I liked his arc. And then Alfre Woodard. playing Mariah.
She steals the show for me.
And her arc goes to a very interesting place by the end.
Incredibly spoilery thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But when she kills Cottonmouth.
Yeah.
That moment, and I was watching it with other people and knew it was about to happen. As soon as we had a discussion earlier about them. Are they hinting that she was sexually abused? And we were like, yeah, I think they are. I think they're hinting that the uncle was that she's studying to keep her away from him. That Mama Mabel is kind of rescuing her from Pistol Pete.
Right.
But when he says as a jab back at her, you liked it. I saw you flirt with him and you liked it. And I had a moment of, you don't say that.
Yeah, what is wrong with
sexual assault victims?
Dumbass.
And she picked that bottle up and clocks him, shoves him out the window. And then when she's beat, that was one of the truest, most vicious things I've ever seen. Up there with Gemma killing Jax's wife and Sons of Anarchy. Just one of those, like, that's the goriest, most honest. There's no hiding that this is a crime of passion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although they did try to.
It kind of made me, brought me back to that scene in the first season of Daredevil where we see the flashback to Fisk as a kid.
Yes.
When he just had enough with his dad. And this is the person I am.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, Shade stepping up to her and going, hey, this is the moment where you decide who you are and this is you.
Right. So I also wanted to ask, Claire Temple makes a big appearance about the second half of the show. And they really sort of play up her romance with Luke and her sort of connective tissue in the Marvel Universe. Am I the only one who doesn't understand why they think she's so interesting?
Well, I get the first part. I get having her being that Agent Coulson, that thing that connects the whole universe.
Yeah, sure.
Although there was another character that did that. I can't think of his name, but who's the informant on the street?
Oh, Turk.
Turk, yeah. I was like, he's the Agent Coulson of the streets.
Yeah.
Got to keep this universe together.
Oh, yeah, Turk is cool.
Yeah. But no, I totally see her coming in and even, you know, the little bit about, well, maybe my role in all this is, you know, like the nurse for these super...
Right. She's the night nurse. They even name her.
Yeah, I like her as the person that's first putting together the people have powers.
But then why hook her up with Luke Cage at the end of the season?
See, the thing, Claire Temple in the comics was Luke Cage's love interest.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of makes sense. But yeah, I didn't think the chemistry was there.
No, that's the facet of the character I don't like. They should not hook her up with Luke, in my opinion. But I loved her showing up on the show. She really helped jar the show along when it was starting to slump a little bit for me when she shows up.
Yeah, I did. Good introduction. Because that's like episode 7 where I was saying it kind of starts to slump a bit.
I feel like, you know how 3 Days of the Condor has that really quick, they get together really quick in that movie and just kind of go with it?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it was this. It was like, all of a sudden, these two are really in love with each other, and I didn't buy into it. I didn't think they got
considering
there.
Considering that I really loved him not remembering her.
Yeah.
But considering that he doesn't remember her, really... I mean, who's to say that she's... There was a minute there where I thought, you know, you don't know that she's not lying, man.
Yeah.
Like, you don't remember her at all.
Right.
Yeah.
I do want to... I'm questioning also... maybe I'm wrong, but when she was in Daredevil, wasn't she always kind of pushing him to stop doing what he was doing? And here she's pushing Luke in the other direction?
It's because of the events of Daredevil season 2.
Okay, so this is an evolution of the character.
I feel like.
Okay, that makes sense.
The hospital being attacked, which she brings up to her mom.
Yeah, that's right.
She talks about that. I think that was a game changer where she realized that the only thing that was going to save her in these situations were that there were superpowered people on the other side of the line, too. That Daredevil was a good guy, and there are good guys.
The only thing that stops a bad guy with superpowers is a good guy.
A good guy with superpowers. That's why I concealed carry a superhero all the time.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you have to conceal. That's a secret identity.
Matt Murdock's like, hey, my superpower is I'm blind, so I mean, just do whatever you want with that.
I just close my eyes and be Daredevil.
You know one villain we didn't talk about?
Who's that?
That I thought was amazing, and I would love to see her more and maybe see her more in the second season in flashbacks is Mama Mabel.
Mabel. Yeah.
She was
on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she cut that dude's finger off.
Yep.
Oh my God. Yeah. Just
that's where we're going.
Yeah, that was like they had that thing like, oh, it's gonna be a threat. No, she just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not going to threaten you. She's just going to do it.
And it was over an ethics thing of I do girls, I do protection, I do we don't
guns?
Sell drugs.
Yeah.
No drugs.
Yeah.
Why did you think I thought you were going to this crack cocaine thing's blowing up. Chop.
Yeah.
We're not doing that.
there's a weird sequence later on, and again, I don't know, Les, if you've gotten to this point yet, where they have to get the shrapnel out of Luke.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they go to Burstein, and they do this. There's this weird, like, body horror focus of, like, dipping him in the acid and him screaming. And then it was a weird... You know, Daredevil, I love Daredevil, but Daredevil got a little focused on the ultraviolence. This is a little focused on the body horror sometimes.
This was not nearly as body horror bad as the kids that cut their own arms and set back down in the tubs in Daredevil Season 2. Though.
Yeah, that's true.
That straight up skeeved me out. When that kid killed his dad, and then you realize, like, oh, shit, you guys all volunteered for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that whole thing with the acid bath, poorly planned, in my opinion. Even if you watch it, and I hate to spoil the magic, but they never even took the second bullet out.
Yes, that bothered the crap out of me. The other thing that bothered me on, and this is kind of related to Diamondback, there's the second time Diamondback shoots him, he's standing
in the trash truck.
Yeah, he's standing in front of the trash truck, and it doesn't explode before they roll the credit.
Yeah. I was like, I thought those bullets like burned and exploded.
How many times have you shown me this? This Chekhov's gun better go off.
Yeah.
Like, that thing needs to fucking explode.
Yeah.
So, here's me trying to justify this to myself. Do you think maybe that second bullet cleared the arm?
Maybe it did.
And that's why there wasn't any trace.
Marvel has a built-in out-of-jail-free card for me for the rest of their lives because you win a no prize for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That I gotta love Marvel for making that a standing thing. That I can rationalize out shit from Marvel, and it's... I win.
Yeah, well, never do that for DC.
We're running long, so I should wrap up here. No, it's fine. But I have one more thing I want to mention, which ties into what you just mentioned, is I wish the Marvel TV and movies were not as separate as they are. Like, I really feel like in the comics, the Seagate experiments were tied in trying to recreate the Super Soldier Serum. And the Hulk in the Marvel Cinematic comes from Super Soldier Serum. Like, why not make that throwaway reference to the Super Soldier Serum? Like, that's what they were trying to do. Why not have, when there's a superpowered incident going on in the club, a consultant from S.H.I.E.L.D. show up to try to add just a dude in a suit.
I mean, they're already selling DVDs of the incident.
Yeah.
Like, you are clearly in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
4K for 4K.
I would have killed for a reference to the Gem Theater. Just like when he gets out of the movies, if he had lived above the Gem Theater, just like the costume throwback, just like a one scene moment. And same thing, I miss the Hero for Hire. I get why it could be problematic, but I miss the Hero for Hire aspect of it.
Yeah.
The very first two episodes of Luke Cage, if I remember correctly, both do a holy shit crazy scene. Wait, roll back, tell you a whole story, walk back to that scene.
Yeah.
And I really hate that trope. Or that gimmick.
Yeah.
And
to see Daredevil used, did it a lot.
To see it used twice in a row in episodes that, you know, damn well I didn't wait a week between. I don't understand that. And it gets me into a larger discussion of, do TV writers know in a time of flux like we're in, what do you do when you know, like, you don't need episodic, you don't need case of the week anymore. You can do full mythology.
Right.
You can do Hulu shows where they're going to drop once a week.
Yeah.
But you can still do crazy mythology, or you can do Netflix shows, but they're going to drop all at once. And so do you pace your story different for that?
Yeah.
Because you don't need the 15 minutes at the end where you come back from commercial and the A-team suddenly solves it.
Right. Yeah.
You're never going to go to commercial.
Yeah.
So you're just going to run 13 hours of a movie for me. I think it changes the pacing of the writing, and I don't feel like all the writers know quite what to do with this new toy yet.
I very much agree with you. We're still in that transition phase where people don't know how to write to a binge, which, again, one of the things that Stranger Things did really well. Mm-hmm. They knew what they paced that for a binge.
I think the shows that view themselves as a miniseries event
are doing
that better.
Yeah, Fargo does that really well, too. Yeah.
Well, I think two simple things that Marvel could do with any of their series going forward is less episodes. Go 10 episodes.
10 episodes
and
for sure.
I think experiment with what you just mentioned that Hulu does. Try releasing these weekly.
Oh, man.
Because I wonder if you couldn't see a character like Cottonmouth come together and go, maybe we change it. Maybe we leave him around a little longer because he's being so well received. I don't know if that's something you can do.
I think they're going to have it all filmed. But I wonder if some of the things like that moment with Cottonmouth and Mariah where she kills him. Spoilers. I hope people know.
Way
we're doing,
past that.
People
we're
know
way
we're
past
spoilers.
That.
I hope that I like to think that was like episode 5, right? Or episode 6. It's sort of late in the run, middle of the run.
Middle of the run.
If you had watched that one hour a week, and you've definitely got in your head that this guy Cottonmouth is one of the big bad guys,
because that's where I was.
Yeah. If you'd been, and if you were in week five and it ends with him getting killed, you'd be like, oh my God, I got to see week six right now.
That episode ended what I could watch that evening.
Yeah.
And so like it stopped and I had the striking moment of like, well, shit, the villain is not the villain anymore.
Yeah.
Like the villain's dead. That like comic book or not, he's not coming back from that.
My moment like that, I'm so embarrassed to admit this, Bazooka episode. It was like my last one before bed, and then he whips out a bazooka. Like what?
Yeah.
No, I gotta watch one more.
My first thought though was the very first episode of Justified, and I so wanted him to yell fire in the hole.
Yeah. All right, that about wraps it up for this week.
Yeah.
Thanks for sticking with us for our long discussion of Luke Cage and Westworld. Let us know what you guys thought. We'll be back next week with more. Until next time,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.